Coming to you from the outskirts of the greatest territory in wrestling history, Memphis, Tennessee, it's Wrestling Talk with Mayor McCall. I'm the mayor and I will be your host for this episode. Willie B is out jet flying around the world Nature Boy style, so he will not be available on this episode for the hot tag. I'm the founder, promoter, and CEO of Wrestling Talk. I'm the Mark of Marks, the Wrangler of Ring Rats, and the unofficial president of the Brian Christopher Fan Club. We have a very, very, very special guest today. He is a true wrestling legend known all over the world. He is a former NWA World Champion. He has had legendary runs in Georgia, Memphis, WCW, ECW, Smoky Mountain, USWA, and the list goes on and on. Everyone make sure they got their fire extinguishers and smoke alarms, because it's getting hot in here. Somebody say something about wildfire. We about to get fired up. Ladies and gentlemen, somebody the one and only Wildfire, Tommy Rich.
Somebody say something about Mayor McCall's on the roll today. We all going to be fired.
Hey, Tommy, welcome to the show, and thank you so much for doing this, man. Since we hooked up, I've been so excited about doing this, so thank you for coming on with me, man.
Well, thank you for having me, man. Memphis, where it's all started for me at.
No doubt. I've been just as excited as Dusty Rhodes looking for some horsemen. So I've been very, very excited about this one.
Yes, sir.
I've been telling everybody all week how the mayor and Wildfire was going to burn it down. So I'm surprised somebody didn't call the fire marshal.
Yeah, I heard that. See, back in the day, we did burn at Memphis down.
Y'all sure did. Well, let's go ahead and kick it off or whatever. How old were you when you broke into the wrestling business, and who trained you?
I was just turned 18, and Jerry Jarrett Tojo Yamamoto trained.
Okay, and if I'm not mistaken, you're from Hendersonville, Tennessee, correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay, that's definitely Jerry Jarrett and Jeff Jarrett country up there. I've heard the stories of, you know, Stu Hart and the dungeon training. Did Jerry Jarrett happen to have a basement at his house as well?
Oh, he had basements, dungeons, and everything. But we didn't train at the house. We went down. They had a gym, and we went down to the gym and worked out. Shoot, I learned most of mine. I wrestled some in high school, and then. Most of mine, I learned. I had a few workouts when I first started. Jerry used to come watch me play football on Friday nights. I was a pretty good football player. But anyway, Eddie Marlin, which Jerry Jarrett married his daughter, is how I got to meet Jerry Jarrett. And so he had me a partial scholarship to Louisville, Kentucky, because I could catch the ball good, but I wasn't very fast. So. Anyway, long story short is I didn't. My mom and dad got a divorce, split up. I didn't have the money to go, so I talked to them. I seen them driving the big Lincoln, the big Cadillac. And I thought, damn, that's something I'd like to do. And so I talked to them, and I'd go over there. And Jared would say, be over here at 3 o'clock on such and such a day, and I'd be there every time, take off work early, whatever I needed to do. And every time I'd get there for about 4 to 6 months, he'd say, he said, well, it's too late now. We got to go to town. What he was doing, just seeing if I really had the heart to do it. And I showed up every time, and then I met Tojo, and he started training me. And then the first match I had was in Tupelo, Mississippi, against Phil here.
Was that was around 1975, 76?
Yeah, right at the end of 75, yeah.
Okay, cool. Man, what two great legends to learn from. I mean, Jerry Jarrett was just a mastermind genius in the wrestling business. And Tojo Yamamoto, he could be a face or he could be the most hated heel on the planet.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And he was – and Tojo, he kind of nasty anyway. He hated being a good guy. He liked being a good guy.
Yeah, I've read those stories. I think he really got a kick, and he really enjoyed being a heel, and he did it so well. I mean, that's, if you watch some of that old, you know, Memphis wrestling and some of that footage, that's actually the first time Lance Russell got aggressive. He got a hammer out on Tojo.
Old Lance Russell, one of the greatest commentators of wrestling.
Absolutely. I had reached out to you before when we were recording Shane Russell, and I appreciate what the comments and sentiments you had. You know, you said that Lance Russell and Gordon Solie were the two best, you know, hands down, the two best announcers in the history of wrestling, and that's really a great two. And, you know, of course, we cover the Memphis territory, so we're, you know, Lance is our guy. He was the voice of Memphis wrestling, and he sold – you know, he put you guys over so well, and he sold some of those, you know, he sold most of those angles. He was just incredible.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he was just that old country fella that just knew how to talk and sell it. And then, of course, Gordon, Gordon would say words sometimes, and I didn't even know what they meant, you know. So I'm thinking, well, yeah, they always was very nice to me and give me nothing but praise. I might show a little favoritism toward them, but they was just always really nice.
Absolutely, and everybody loves Wildfire. You know, I get a lot of messages and comments, you know, from the journey I'm on right now, and it's just, you know, my social media has been hopping all week. You know, so many stories of Wildfire, Tommy Rich, so many encounters. And I'm going to tell you, brother, these people love you, man. They love you. And nobody, you know, and I have not, you know, honest to God, I have not had one negative, you know, thing in my inbox or email or anything about you, Tommy. And people love to be around you, and they talk how awesome you are with the fans. And we so appreciate that, man. We really do.
Hey, I learned at an early age, if it wasn't for them, they wouldn't be none of us around. You know, I mean, you know, just, and which I love the fans, man. I mean, they were always cool to me. And hey, you treat people the way you want to be treated, and life's good, man. And the fans was great to me, and always, I'm sure I missed a couple of autographs here and there. But as a whole, I tried to sign everybody that I could. Except, you know, when I was a bad guy in Memphis. Now, when I was a heel, I was a heel.
Absolutely, and that, you know, and that goes back to the, you know, when wrestling was real and keeping kayfabe alive, and you had to do certain things at that time in the business, because, you know, that was the days before the internet and the dirt sheets and what have you not. So you had to make people believe.
Oh yes, sir. I mean, it's like a magic act. I mean, you'll go to a magic act a million times, but once you know how it's done, the mystique's gone, and it ain't as big a deal, you know. So that's why we were a close-knit group like that. I mean, it was, you know, and that was the magic of it. I mean, people really believed.
And you know, and to reiterate and piggyback what Willie B has said a couple times on the show, you know, once the toothpaste is out of the tube, you can't get it back in there. It's out for good.
Oh, Lord, yeah. Lord, yeah. I mean, it's a new day. It's a different world, I mean, in wrestling. But everything changes. I mean, it's, you know, even if we talk about going back to when things was like this, I mean, even if everything stopped right now, it still could never go back to the way it was. It'll still be where it's at now. So you can't, you know, you just gotta move with the changes, man, whether you like it or not.
And I fully agree with that. Of course, the mayor, I was born in 1981, and man, this was a huge year for you. You were Pro Wrestling Illustrated Most Popular Wrestler of the Year. I was actually born on April 24th, and 3 days later, April 27th, you beat Harley Race for the NWA World Title. How old were you when that happened, and what was it like for somebody at your age to process that?
Shoot, I guess I was about 20, 21, I think, somewhere in there, right around that age. And as far as processing it, like I said, I was 21, young. I mean, great responsibility. It's a great honor. I mean, you know, just to be in the group of guys that I'm listed with and got to work against Harley Race, to be one of the greatest of all time.
Absolutely. Harley Race is definitely one of the greatest of all times. I can't imagine, you know, looking back to, you know, being 21 years old and having something like that on my shoulders. I mean, I'm sure like you said, it was a great accomplishment, especially at that age, but I'm sure there was just a lot of pressure that came with that as well.
Oh yeah. It's, I mean, it's, That's the most prestigious belt there was. I mean, the NWA, I mean, everything evolved around that. I mean, you had your territories, but, you know, that's what everybody wanted to be, was the NWA World Heavyweight Champion. Thanks to Harley Race and the greatest wrestling fans in the world, I got the opportunity to do that.
And I'm sure, you know, a lot of people don't know, it was a little bit harder for you too in the real life scenario and behind the scenes, because I want to say, you know, that came about too because there was a power struggle going on in the Georgia territory with, you know, the promoter Jim Barnett, and talk to us about that.
Oh, well, Mr. Barnett, I mean, I went to Georgia, Ole Anderson wanted to get rid of me. Mr. Barnett said no. And of course, the first night, Jerry got me booked down there. Shoot, I had a brand new robe, got there, sold out crowd. And my pick of the draw was Abdullah the Butcher. He beat me in 30 seconds, busted my head open. Tony Atlas saved me. And Jerry told me, he said, if you get down there and don't like it, just call and I'll get you out of it. Well, I thought about calling him. If they'd had cell phones in, I probably would have.
And
I stuck it out. You know, I stuck it out in Georgia. And first, and then Tony and me teamed up. Tony Atlas, first Salt and Pepper team ever to win the Southern Tag Titles down there in Georgia. So, I mean, I've been so blessed with all the accomplishments that I've done in this business.
Absolutely. Like I said before, you're one of the true legends of this business. You really are. And I think it's a testament to, you know, being that age and who you were and on the career path that you were going, because, you know, I've read the articles and stuff. Harley Race had no problem putting you over. And I want to say that he actually encouraged it, because he knew you were a star and he knew that was going to boost you up, whether you had the title for 4 days or not. I mean, who gives a damn? You were the NWA World Champion. You beat Harley Race and nobody can ever take that away from you. And I just think it's so cool how Harley, you know, gave you that blessing.
Oh, yeah, Harley. I mean, like I said, a lot of times you'd have to wrestle 45 minutes to an hour and you'd dread the hell out of it. It was always a pleasure to go out there and go an hour with Harley, because it's just all you had to do is sit back and listen and have fun, man.
I've heard those stories as well, and people say it was, you know, a pleasure to work with Harley, that he was a true class act.
And I had never heard nobody say he wasn't, that's for sure. And if they did, they was wrong.
And I know they damn sure wouldn't tell that to his face.
You ain't lying. Harley was tough. You ain't kidding.
Yeah, he was. We'll continue on with Georgia. 1983 Georgia Championship Wrestling. You and Buzz Sawyer, y'all had been feuding back with some great matches. Tell us about working with Buzz Sawyer.
It was a fight every night. Buzz would go out there and go, and I seen him hurt some boy. I told him, Otis said, you think y'all could draw money? I said, yeah, as long as he don't hurt me. And Buzz always took care of me. I mean, we got some bumps and bruises because we worked hard, you know, but he didn't ever do nothing stupid to really hurt, you know. So, you figure we went around the loop for 2 years. That's longer than any angle I can ever.
And that angle, the culmination of that angle resulted in a match called the Last Battle of Atlanta. That was a fully enclosed cage match. What are your memories working that match? That was, you know, that was a huge deal. That was, you know, I think the first fully enclosed cage.
That's what led to the Hell in the Cell. That's where that came from.
Absolutely. Shawn Michaels had watched that footage. And he went to Vince or one of the other higher ups in the WWF or WWE, whatever you want to call it, and that, you know, said, hey, we, you know, let's use this concept that Rich and Sawyer did. And you're exactly right. That's where they get the WWE Hell in a Cell from. So if you didn't know that,
of course, their cage is a lot classier than the one we was.
Hey, but y'all are the trendsetters. There wouldn't be any type of cage like that without you and Buzz. So I just think that's amazing and incredible, man. I really do.
Well, thank you very much, man. You hear that?
We jumped to 1987. there was a big match in Memphis, Tennessee. It was a hair versus hair match with Jerry the King Lawler versus Austin Idol in a cage. And Austin had agreed to put up $50,000 of his own money, and he would have to reimburse the fans at the Mid-South Coliseum for their tickets if he lost that match. Well, lo and behold, Tommy Wildfire Rich was the wild factor in that match. It was a cage match, and you came out from under the ring and delivered two pile drivers to Lawler, the second one being a spiked with the assistance of Austin, and Austin was able to get that win over Lawler. Tell us about your experience in that match.
that was a long afternoon, man. When I got there, we got there before security. I don't know, you know who Randy West is? He did all the filming.
Yes, sir, Randy West.
Yeah, Randy. So anyway, I got on his little cart that he pushes out before the matches, got under a tarp, crawled under the ring, had a six-pack of beer and an air mattress. Not really an air mattress, a float that you get in the pool with, not really a mattress. So I just got back from Japan and had jet lag, so it wasn't real bad. So I'd drink a beer, go to sleep, wake up, use the bathroom in the can, drink another, and go back to sleep. About the first thing I remember is that Memphis ring was so loud. In the first match, I didn't even hear the announcement. The first thing I heard was one of the big bumps on it. I raised up, hit my head on one of the metal poles on the bottom. Didn't know. I thought, where in the hell am I at? But anyway, then it come back to me, so I just stuck it out. I'd seen them guys get heat before. I seen what real heat was that night. I mean, they were trying to climb over the cage.
Austin Idol was quoted as saying that he doesn't know how he escaped with his life that night.
Because he took off running. They called extra police, and they had to get extra police. All of a sudden, Austin hollered, run. I was still standing there.
That was one of the times at the Mid-South Coliseum the fans really were pissed off and went to a frenzy, because if you don't know anything about Memphis wrestling, people love their Memphis wrestling down here, and people believe, that's back when, Tales of the Territories wrestling was real in Memphis, Tennessee.
Oh, you ain't lying. I mean, we seen it that night. I mean, I hadn't seen, it'd been a while since I seen heat like that.
And it's funny that we talked about you under the ring, because I've read so many articles and different, accounts over the years. So I wanted to personally ask you about that, because people say that you were, you were under that ring anywhere from 4 to 6 hours, and they say you had a case of beer under there. You said you had a six pack. They say you had a case.
No, it's just six pack. If I'd had a case, I probably couldn't have got from out from under there.
That's what I always thought too, though, and I try to be realistic about that. And I was like, if anybody had a case of beer, I'm sure you're not going to be able to deliver two pal drivers like that.
Yeah, you ain't lying.
And that's also, man, that's also a testament of what kind of shape you're in, because me or the average fan or anybody else could not stay under a ring that amount of time and get out and do anything physical. We would be too stiff. It just wouldn't happen.
Yeah. Oh yeah. But then if you heard that crowd, that adrenaline gets going, and you ain't worried about no stiffness.
Yeah. I can imagine that. And I'm sure, I've read and heard those stories about, the Mid-South Coliseum and its heyday. And I'm sure that place was, I've talked to Handsome Jimmy, I've talked to others, and Randy Hales, taught me that if the fire marshal didn't come, that the Coliseum, a legit sellout, was about 11,800, and Madison Square Garden held about 20,000, and that Mid-South Coliseum could get just as rowdy or just as electrifying as Madison Square Garden at times.
Oh yeah, because I mean it was jam packed. I mean it was. You come in there on a Monday night and it wasn't full, something was wrong.
Right, I totally agree with that. And we also get something else from that match too. You had aligned yourself with Austin Idol, so the King had to reach out for some help too. So he gets, lo and behold, Bill Superstar Dundee gets involved. So tell us about some of those matches with you and Idol against the King and the Superstar.
Oh, it was. I mean, Bill and Jerry Bolt was over and the people hated us. So it was just, it was electrifying every time you went out there. Hey, let me tell you a quick story about Bill Dundee.
Absolutely, please.
One day, we did Memphis TV one morning, right? And Jerry Lawler's involved with these girls going to do some mud wrestling somewhere, and he had to go to it. So I met one of the gals, and we was going to meet him at the bar. So we get in. I got my little brother with me. He's 14, so I left him at the hotel. Anyway, we got in the bar. We go to the bar and get in there, and we get towed up. Bill's got a pistol. It falls out on the dance floor. People scatter, so we had to leave. So we get back. Bill asks this girl, I just bought a new 76 Oldsmobile Regency. It's all our style in there. But anyway, we're all three up in the front seat. Well, Bill and this girl, I'm trying to get the date and everything, and he's arguing with her. She don't know how to lock up. And so anyway, in a few minutes, they're out in the parking lot. He's showing her how to lock up. So they get back in the car, and that girl looked at Bill. She said, "You wouldn't have shot that gun anyway in that bar." All of a sudden, Bill reaches in the glove box and pulls that gun out and shoots him two or three times in there.
Whoa.
Well, put it back in the thing, put it back in the thing, and we're told passport in there on Brooks Road. And anyway, there's two ways in. And I'm thinking, we need to get out of this car. In a few minutes, security comes down and asks, "Did y'all hear a gunshot? Everybody said no. But of course, he did. Somebody called. About that time, around each side, about four or five police cars each way pull up. Say, "Get out with your hands up." So long story short is, Bill told his officer, said, "I'm a superstar, motherfucker." Anyway, they put his handcuffs on tight and put mine on loose, took us to jail. I don't know if you've seen the mug shots on Facebook of me and Bill Dundee.
I have it. That's exactly why I do this, because I love hearing these stories. And that's funny you said that, because I haven't heard this one, but I've read other stuff. Bill was not shy about pulling out that pistol.
Yeah. So anyway, they took us to jail and charged us. Well, they would have deported him because he's from Australia and wasn't supposed to have a gun. So I took the gun route. But and as far as Bill drawed a lot of money with Lawler, and me and Bill as a tag team drawed a lot of money. So I seen both sides of Bill, you know. We pierced Jamie's ear when he was 5 years old. We pierced his ear. I mean, yeah, I don't know if that's a good thing or not. But anyway, we did.
You know, and I talk to Jamie sometimes. Actually, we've exchanged some text messages and all. And honestly, I tell everybody I probably couldn't even, you know, read these text messages as most people. I know I get kicked out of a church if I read these text messages. So, you know, that could be your fault, Wildfire. You pierced his ear when he was 5 years old, and you set Jamie on the path he went in life.
He grew up around all that wild stuff too.
Exactly. You know, this makes this fun too, because I'm from this area, and you mentioned Brooks Road. Were you familiar with a place called Billy Bob's Bad Vapors?
Billy Bob Bad Vapors. Where was that at?
It was off of Brooks Road. It was one of those clubs. My mom actually was the, God rest her soul, love you, Mom. She was the head secretary there for a while, and she had stories of Jerry Lee Lewis coming in and a lot of the guys.
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah. Yes, I've been there before, yeah.
And there was a place called Hernando's Hideaway.
Hernando's, that was the one I'm thinking about. And then there was one that Elvis Presley, and I stayed there. A friend of mine still runs. They the safest place in the world on Brooks Road now. But I stayed there not long ago. The old Travel Lodge there. What the Travel Lodge did, but they got a big stage, and they got a corner where Elvis used to come and sit. And, we used to go down there a lot, too.
Very, very, very cool. Very, very cool. Very cool. And so that's why I say I love doing this. I get to hear the local stories and everything like that. We'll jump to 1984. The territory system was changing. The landscape of the business was starting to be a little bit different. So with that being said, the Fabulous Ones, Steve Kern and Stan Lane, they left Memphis to go work for Vern Gagne's AWA. And all of a sudden, with the blessing of Jackie Fargo, you and Eddie Gilbert became the new Fabulous Ones, or Fargo's Fabulous Ones. Tell us about working with Eddie.
Oh, I loved it. The whole Gilbert family. I knew Tommy. When I was about 13, I was going to Evansville, Indiana. I'd go with Eddie Marvin sometimes, Tommy and Eddie. And we go into Evansville, and all of a sudden, you remember the old Bounty Hunters and Jimmy Kent?
Yes, sir.
Anyway, we're going along the road, and they pull up beside us, and they start shooting each other birds. And I'm in that back seat, son. I sunk down in that seat. I thought, oh, my God, they fixed to fight here before we even get there. But, yeah, Eddie, but I grew up, Eddie, he used to take pictures, but I was around him, especially Dougie, me and him teamed up. So the whole Gilbert family, man, just a great wrestling family.
Absolutely. Something I'm very curious about, because I can't see them actually, I don't know the concept behind everything or the booking, but I didn't really actually see them putting you and Eddie together to replace the Fabulous Ones, because that was a team that really, could not be replaced. Were y'all really put together just to set up the feud between you and Eddie?
I think they were just grasping. I think it was a bad decision. We were more like prefabs. I loved being with Jackie Fargo because he was my hero when I was little. To get to do that and be with Jackie, that was a blessing because I loved Jackie Fargo. But I just think you couldn't follow Stephen's fan. And Blake brought us in as Tommy Rich and Eddie Gilbert, managed by Jackie Fargo. I think we'd have done much better.
Absolutely. And you and Eddie went to split up, and man, I got to tell you that and all the times I've ever watched Memphis wrestling, that was one of the wildest angles on a Saturday morning on Memphis television. You and Eddie had split up. Y'all were being presented Tag Team of the Year award, and you came out there and you confronted Eddie and you started beating the brakes off of him. So, you whipped Eddie real good, and we come back from commercial and, Eddie's crying in the camera. He's saying he's wrong. He's sorry. He's made a big mistake and he's just been jealous and he's seen the light of his ways and blah, blah, blah. And, we go back to Lance Russell. Lance Russell really sold that spot there because, he convinced the crowd that Eddie was being sincere. If Lance said something, the crowd was going to hang on his every word. So he was it takes a big man to, admit your mistakes and basically, in a nutshell, like we're proud of you, Eddie. But then lo and behold, you and Eddie are walking off and the camera cuts to Lance. And Lance looks like he just lost a family member. He is flat foot disgusted. And then the camera pans over, and Eddie is beating on you with a steel chair.
Yeah, yes, sir. Oh, yeah, we reversed that angle, yeah.
And when you watch that fist throwing, man, y'all were legit throwing some hard punches. And that ended up being a bloody bath that day. It really did.
Yeah, that was a real bloody morning. Yeah, it sure was. But I mean, like you learn when you like you see a throw punches a day and they'll miss it by 6 inches and the guy takes a punch. If you've done that back in the day, you got up and got your ass pounded, You know to lay that shit in.
Absolutely. And, not taking, I will say I'm not a big fan of sports entertainment. I don't follow the new stuff. Once in a while I do if there's something big going on. I mean, not knocking anybody that does. I mean, I'm a wrestling lover. But, there's just a difference between the today style and that style. Like you look today and things are a lot more, choreographed. And you watch some of that old footage and I'll be damned if I want to get hit by Eddie Gilbert or Tommy Rich. I mean, hell no.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it's a different day, but the kids today, man, they athletes. I mean, a lot of that stuff they do. I mean, I'm a ground and pound man. I get past that second rope, my nose starts bleeding. So these guys, I respect what they do. I mean, it's a different world today. It's like you said, it's choreographed where we had live. Bullet Bob Armstrong said it best. It's like vaudeville, Shakespeare, walk and talk, you know. And people, I mean, what they buy tonight in this town, they might not be buying the next night in the next town. So you have to kind of play it by ear if you want to get the people with it, you know. So it's definitely different, but then guys are certainly at
absolutely, and that'll feed into my next angle I want to talk about, because you guys were master storytellers. There was one angle in the 80s in Memphis wrestling where your mom, Peggy Rich, was that actually your real mom that came out there on TV?
Yes, sir. That's my mama.
Wow, man, your mom should win Oscar of the Year. She was like a female Lance Russell. Like, I didn't know if that was your mom or not, but, you know, give people the backstory. You know, you had been going all over the place, and your mom came out there, and she was talking about, you know, that how you needed to reconnect with the fans, and the fans needed to accept you, and, you know, she just, you know, and you were kind of embarrassed because she was there and such, but she, you know, gave a whole spiel and, you know, cut a mom felt promo with her to her son, and all of a sudden, who comes out there? Handsome Jimmy Valiant and Tojo Yamamoto.
Yes, sir. Yeah, that was a heck of an angle. You know, I mean, just my mom, like when I did wrestle Harley, she came down and did one in Atlanta. My mom's good sport.
Hey, you know, they come out there and circled your mom, and Handsome Jimmy just right off the bat starts insulting your mom. And after you come out there, the melee ensues. And actually, man, your mom was willing to take a bump. Handsome Jimmy shoved your mom down, which was crazy.
Yeah, she sure did. She took the bump and all.
She really did. And that's why I was always wondering with the promo she delivered and the bump she took. I was like, I can't wait to ask Tommy, was that really his mother?
Yes, sir. She's 88 and still kicking, man.
Send regards to Miss Peggy from the mayor. Tell her I think she's an awesome lady and she did a hell of a job on Memphis wrestling, and we all love her.
All right, I sure will, man. I sure will. She'll appreciate it.
Okay, cool. That's why we do this, for feel good moments and to hear these stories and, you know, connect with the guys, connect with the fans, and keep these memories alive. 1989, you went to WCW. Did Eddie Gilbert have something to do with that?
Yeah, Eddie got me booked there, yeah. Crockett wasn't a big Tommy Rich fan, and Eddie was on the committee, and he got me brought in there, brought back in there. But never, you know, it really didn't work out, because, like I said, I wasn't a Crockett fan. He wasn't a Tommy Rich fan. That's when he was running it, you know. So it was a lot different when it went from the territories to WCW and WWE. You know, it just that's when the whole world changed. I mean, wrestling.
And it's interesting you said that, because I was really not, and I'm sure a lot of people can agree with me, you know, you being Wildfire Tommy Rich, I was not happy the way you were booked in WCW. I really wasn't, and I'm sure a lot of other people wasn't either.
Yeah, well, that was just because, I mean, they give me a good deal to come, but it was just, you know, for their benefit. But it is what it is, and hey, got to take the good, the bad, and the ugly. And it's, I mean, overall, it's all been good to me, so I have no complaint.
Absolutely. They set you up, you know, to do a feud with Lex Luger, and that really didn't pan out. I mean, if I'm not mistaken, at the end of that summer, you and Lex just end up doing a lot of house shows with Lex going over.
Yeah. Yeah.
One thing that was cool in WCW in 1990, you got to reconnect with Harley Race, and you got to put him over at the Great American Bash and return the favor, you know, from taking that NWA, you know, world title from him back in the day.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, that's what, like I said, I mean, and I mean, people ask me who was my be winning the world heavyweight title, no doubt. But I got to wrestle the best of the best. I mean, so I just was very blessed, man, and very lucky. Had greatest wrestling fan. I mean, I picked wrestling fans are the best fans of all. I don't, you know, football, basketball, you know, whatnot. I just think wrestling fans are the best.
I do too, and that's where my love of professional wrestling comes in. And you know, there's been so many times where just different friends and family, you know, you can that one topic that seems to bring everybody together is professional wrestling, and I love it. I really do, man. I love this.
Oh yeah, back in the day, I mean, you'd see a grandmama or a grandfather and their kids and their kids' kids. You know, I mean, it'd be like a family. It'd be like a family night. You know, I mean, hell. And it didn't matter if it was Monday, Tuesday, it was Louisville, they'd all be there jam-packed. You might about school or what, they would turn out for wrestling.
And what would be funny about that family dynamic would be you might have a grandson, a son, and the granddad, and the granddad was the one taking it most serious. He's the one who's going to whip your ass at the Mid-South Coliseum with a cane.
Oh, you ain't lying. The granny won. I had many a grannies hit him over the head with a cane.
I've seen some of that old footage where, you know, those older ladies were swinging that purse like there was no tomorrow, about to take somebody's head off.
Most of them had something in it too.
Granny gonna hit you with a loaded purse. You know, if you're at that Mid-South Coliseum, you had to watch out for fire, chains, rags of ether, and them grandpa's canes and them grandma's purses.
Just anything winning, maybe that's a dog
house. I tell you what's cool, Tommy, is like what as I do this podcast, I sit in a chair, an actual chair from the Mid-South Coliseum. It's one of the chairs that has the Mid-South Coliseum engraved on the back of it. And I tell you what, man, like I'm a bigger dude, and this chair has no problem holding me up. It's one of the most sturdiest chairs that I've ever encountered, and I cannot imagine getting hit with one of these.
Them chairs was tough, but he just did it. Yes, young and dumb.
And you know, like Wildfire Tommy Rich, you got to be tough to do this business. You really do, especially back in the day.
Got to be tough, and you got to love it too. You got to have a love for it.
Absolutely, I fully agree with that. Everybody knows you love the business and how much you respect it. 1992 to 96, you did a lot of work. You were going back and forth. You did a lot of work with the USWA in Memphis and Smoky Mountain. And like you said before, you and Doug Gilbert did a lot of teaming up. Y'all actually won the USWA tag team titles, which was a huge deal. Y'all beat PG-13. What was it like working? You know, we talked about Jamie before. What was it like working, you and Doug working with PG-13?
Oh, they was good. They listened. They wanted to make money, and it was good. That was the last good money made in Memphis was with that ankle, I believe. If I ain't mistaken. You know, they worked hard there again. My mom, Whoopi's mom, was involved in that.
Oh wow, yeah, I vaguely remember some of that. And, you know, people can say what they want to say, you know, about Jamie, this and that. But Jamie, you know, Jamie and Wolfie, hell of some workers, man. They were badass workers. They really were.
Oh, most definitely. I mean, they work their tails off and do anything you ask them to do. I mean, they listened. You know, I mean, yeah, I enjoyed it. It was fun.
And Doug Gilbert, man, Doug Gilbert was a master heel. You know, Doug could make you believe he had a short fuse and he really was about to kick your ass. I mean, he'd come out there with that baseball bat. He'd look you right in the eye and tell you to shut up. And, you know, if you didn't know any better, you thought Doug was about to jump on you.
Well, he does have a short fuse. I love you, though, Doug.
they say some of the best real life, you know, characterizations turn into the best, you know, gimmicks. So that explains a lot about Doug.
Well, and I mean, but you look at the guy, and I think that's a difference in the business now too. I mean, you look at guys like Ox Baker, Killer Carl Cox, George Animal Steel, Big Bruiser Brody. I mean, Stan Van Man Hansen. You know, I mean, they were all, that was their character. I mean, that's the way they grew up. I mean, most everybody was who they was. When I went to Georgia, I was just a little old skinny cornbread country boy, you know, and the people fell in love with it because they just seen the big guy. You know, I'd go out there and get my ass whooped and keep on fighting, you know. I mean, and the same, you know, there in Memphis when I first started, you know. And that's where Jerry Jarrett, he's the one that taught me how to sell. I mean, Jerry Jarrett, he was a class act, but he knew how to get the people by selling, and that's where when I went to Georgia, I took that with me, and it, you know, caught on like wildfire.
Absolutely. If you don't mind, I know y'all are close and y'all still do a lot of work together. When you talk to Doug, put in a good word for us and tell him to do the show, and he'll have a good time and we'll put his ass over.
Okay, I sure will.
What was it like working with Cornette? You know, you hear all the stories. What was it like working with Cornette in Smoky Mountain?
It was all good. I mean, it was all good till it wasn't. I mean, you know, we was drawing good money, and then the bottom fell out. It wasn't good no more.
Would you agree with this? You know, like we talked about Jerry Jarrett just being a genius in the wrestling business. Would you consider Cornette one of the geniuses in the wrestling business?
I don't know. I mean, when you say genius, I mean, I don't know what all he's done in the business. I know he went to WWE and all that. So, I mean, a lot of people say he is. A lot of people say he ain't. A lot of people say he's an asshole. A lot of people say he ain't. My opinion is just going to be a coin toss.
Absolutely, absolutely. A lot of people respect what he's done. A lot of people don't agree with his politics. So, you know, he's one of those. A lot of people have varied opinions about Jim Cornette.
Yeah. And he's one of them, which I knew Jim. I mean, him and Eddie be in Louisville Gardens taking pictures every Tuesday. I mean, I know Jim, you know, and he was smart. I mean, hell, he bought territory, he ran it, did good with it. And when it got bad, I mean, every other territory was going bad too. So it wasn't nothing that he necessarily did wrong. I just think that's when Vince announced it was sports entertainment. And the people that come to our show still want to believe. And somebody just comes out and tells me sports entertainment. And I understand why Vince did it, because the commission was charging him out the butt. And when he did that, he got the commission off of it. And he went to sports entertainment. So, and he's done good with it. He's done very well with it.
Absolutely. We talk about you doing, you know, working with Cornette and Smoky Mountain. You had developed a relationship back in the early days of Memphis with Paul Heyman in 1997. You went to ECW to work with the FBI, the Full-Blooded Italians. You were known as the Big Don. What was that experience like working in ECW? And I know there was some rowdy fans up there.
There was some rowdy fans and some rowdy boys. Yeah. Well, when I first went up there, I just went in. I was wrestling. They didn't know what to do with me. So anyway, they'd had the FBI before, and they come up with the idea and put me and Tracy and Luke Guido together. Asked me, you know, would I mind managing? And I said, does it pay the same? And they said, yeah. I said, well, I ain't got no problem with it. and loved every, one of my favorite things I ever did. I mean, because them people would be so mad up north when I'd say I was full-blooded Italian, they'd get so damn mad. I loved that. I had a great group of guys. I mean, it was a lot of fun up there.
And how ironic and how funny is that? A guy from Hendersonville, Tennessee, going on, you know, a national stage saying he's Italian.
No joke. I mean, full-blooded at that.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm sure that wasn't quite a different experience for you like it would be some of the boys, because, you know, you were kind of hardcore before there was hardcore. Like, you know, we talk about those bloodbaths with you and Eddie Gilbert and the scaffold matches in Memphis and all like that. So that type of wrestling you were no stranger to.
Oh no, they took it up a note or two too.
Yeah, they did.
Somebody swings a chair at me, I'm throwing my arms up to try to block it. They just stand there and let them hit it. I mean, I'd see them bend chairs over each other. You know, I mean, they was a different type of individual.
Absolutely. And I know you're a busy man this morning, so I'm going to wrap it up. I've got one more topic for you that, you know, I've always been curious about and some of the stuff I've heard. So I'm going to end it on this note. Man, growing up in this area, especially Memphis, Tennessee, I've always heard all the pretty ladies, you know, Tommy Wildfire Rich, Wildfire Tommy Rich, this and that. He's just this. I mean, what was, especially in Memphis, what was it like being a rock star in the business? Because you guys were rock stars, no doubt about it.
Oh, the 80s, I mean, you know, the 80s, that was rock. I mean, that was rock star era anyway. And I guess everything's still hot now, but it was just a different time, man. We was in Charleston, West Virginia one night, and I was wrestling Buzz Sawyer, blowout match in Charleston, West Virginia, but we always stayed the Holiday Inn next door to it. And I asked the lady, wasn't never nobody in the bar because it was on the off night. And I said, if I fill this bar up tonight, can the boys drink the drink? She said, kind of laughed and said, yeah. And so anyway, I got in the ring with Buzz. And before we start, I grabbed that mic. I said, after I kick your ass, we're going next door to the Holiday Inn and have a big party at the bar. Shit, we got out of there and people were chasing us. They had to call extra security. The lady had let us have our beer for free, but she sure wasn't very happy because they had to call. I mean, there was as many people inside as it was outside. I mean, we were rock stars.
Yeah, I'm not trying to, you know, get you kicked out of the house or get Miss Terry mad at me or anything, but, you know, you hear, you know, what are some of the wildest things that have happened with some of those, you know, ring rats trying to just get to you?
Oh, I just, I don't know, that was a long time ago. You go now sometimes and there's more guys than girls. Back in my day, there was more girls than there was guys. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. Would they try to, you know, find out what motel or hotel you guys were staying at and try to run up on you that way and stuff like that?
Oh, yeah, they'd follow you to the building, stop, grab something to drink, whatever, they'd stop. Oh, yeah, I mean, it was a lot of women out there, I'm telling you.
So I'll ask you a final question. I'd actually text Randy Hales yesterday, and I've been marking all week, and I've been excited. So I text Randy Hales yesterday. I said, hey man, I got Wildfire in the morning. Anything I should bring up or mention? And it's so funny that he texted me back. He said, ask him what his best fan base was with the pretty ladies. Was it Memphis 75-86 or Atlanta 77-80? So what was your best fan base with the ladies based on those years and territories?
Yeah, I mean it was live in Tennessee and it was live in Georgia. I mean it was he's like a movie star. All the girls wanted to come. So it was you know, like I said, the grannies, the kids, and everybody else came. I mean, the girls chased you. I said, you know, wrestling too, he wouldn't take his mask off. I've seen people follow him for 30 minutes. And he'd go in the store with his mask on. One night he did that, and they called the police. They about arrested him, and then they realized he was wrestling number two because the fans, he didn't want to see his face, you know.
They thought he was trying to rob the joint.
Yeah. Now then you walk around with the mask on, but you know, didn't nobody do that back then.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, whether it was Memphis 75-86 or Atlanta 77-80, you know, it didn't matter. You were still Wildfire Tommy Rich everywhere you went. And, you know, especially coming from this area and this territory, I mean, the names that jump out to the most with the ladies were definitely the fabulous ones. Steve Kern and Stan Lane and Tommy Rich is always right up there. So you've always been a big hit with the ladies, Wildfire.
Well, thank you very much.
Well, you ain't got to thank me. You can thank them, you know. We'd like to thank all the pretty ladies and the ring rats for all Tommy's support over the years.
Yeah, and all the rest of the wrestling fans too.
Absolutely. Man, Tommy, once again, brother, thank you so much for doing this with me. And, man, it's fun to be excited on a Saturday. You know, we're recording this on a Saturday morning, and it's so excited to do something like this on a Saturday morning. And just, you know, what an honor, pleasure. And, you know, thank you so much for agreeing to do this with me. And hopefully you didn't have any regrets.
Thank you for having me.
All right, Tommy, thank you, brother.
All right, thank you. Hey, God bless everybody.